Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Arrested two sisters, Jamie and Gladys Scott, for armed robbery.
In October of 1994, Jamie and Gladys Scott were each incredibly over-sentenced to double life terms in prison. Neither sister had prior convictions, arrests, or criminal histories. Three young males confessed to the robbery, but implicated and linked Jamie and Gladys to the crime. The men received light sentences of 10 months in exchange for plea bargains. Between $9 and $11 was alleged to have been stolen, and no one, like I said before, was injured or murdered. We're urging everyone to support the petition and assist our efforts in obtaining freedom for these ladies, one of whom is suffering from life-threatening kidney failure. That's what I know about the case so far, but we have their attorney, Mr. Chokwe Lumumba, with us today, and he's going to fill us in on what has happened since that time. I'm going to try to open his mic just a second. And also we have with us today A.J. Houston, a author, poet, and motivational speaker, who's going to be my guest host today. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome to Center Stage.
Hey, what's up? What's up? How y'all doing?
Yeah, good afternoon, Carrie, and good afternoon, brother. This is Chokwe calling from Jackson, Mississippi.
Mr. Lumumba, you heard how I told about the intro. What all? Let's begin by saying you were not the original attorney that tried this case, correct?
No, I was not the trial counsel. No,
okay.
I came in the case. And in the middle of the appeal, actually the trial counsel also was the person who first filed the appeal, but he became suspended from the bar for something unrelated to this case.
Okay.
And when he did, I took over as the appellate counsel and have been with the case through the first part of the first appeal. I also, once the Mississippi Supreme Court denied that, we filed a post-conviction. The main feature of the post-conviction was various affidavits, one of which, one of these Patrick young men, who you've mentioned in your prelogue on this, had recanted his testimony or recanted his statement that the Scott sisters was involved and admitted that they weren't involved and that they had nothing to do with it. We filed that as a post-conviction. The court, the Mississippi Supreme Court, rejected that also. And then we got down to the we did a petition to the governor for a pardon or clemency back years ago. This was the governor Musgrove, who was in office at the time. With very little review of it, they denied it. And at that point, and this would have been maybe 10, 12 years ago, we turned the case over to the Innocence Project, which was going to try to do some more work on the case. However, the Innocence Project, either at that time or shortly thereafter, determined that they were only going to work on cases which dealt with DNA, scientific evidence. So they were not able to really do much on the case. And since that time, a number of different people, paralegals and basically just supporters of Jamie and Gladys Scott, have fought with this case and have done a brilliant job on the Internet, once the Internet became more popular, to keep the case alive. What has really brought the case back to the surface very strong is the fact that Jamie Scott has lost the use of both of her kidneys. She has a level 5 renal failure in both kidneys, and so she's in prison, supposedly getting a dialysis treatment. Prison is ill-equipped to provide the same, so she's been rushed to the hospital several times. And so the fact that she is totaling on the brink of disaster health-wise in terms of dying because of what is happening with her in prison is one of the things that brought the case back to light.
Let me ask you about Jamie. What is it? You just said that she has kidney failure. Some are saying that it's because of that she's not getting the dialysis treatment for vases and because of poor diet. In the prisons, is that correct?
Well, yeah, everybody's diet in the prison is poor, and of course she needs to have better diet than most people, and so yes, the diet is bad. The kidney failure, I don't know whether that's related to the bad diet in the prison or whether or not that's been caused by other causes, but now that she has it, the diet is certainly not helping the situation. And then finally, as far as the dialysis treatment, oh, she's getting an attempt at a dialysis treatment. But the dialysis machine in the prison doesn't function all the time. It breaks down from time to time. And it causes has caused her several infections where she's had to be rushed to the hospital. So, no, it's not a competent. It's medical incompetence in terms of the type of treatment she's getting in the prison. And if it was anywhere else, people would be subject to a malpractice suit. And so what we're facing here is that they are in a position where, although they're refusing to release her so she can be treated for this, they are totally incapable of doing a good job on it. And in addition to that, they are denying that she is a medical emergency and needs to be released from prison. That's the Department of Correction. The Mississippi Department of Correction is our problem there, right?
Let me ask a question on that. When I spoke on the intro, I did not mention that robbery. From what I understand, that the Gladys and Jamie Scott had nothing to do with the crime. Is that true?
We don't believe they did. We don't think they had anything to do with the crime at all. We think that this was an incident where both of them had gone out to help purchase some things at a store. What happened is that they wound up, their car wound up malfunctioning. Gladys saw these two men who she knew from the factory where she worked and asked them to give them a ride. And when once they gave them a ride, the men who had been drinking tried to make sexual advances at them. They got out of the car and began to walk toward their home. And at that time, these three young men descended upon these two guys that were in the car and then encountered them and accosted them. Now, there's even some question in my mind whether there was a real robbery, period. I kind of believe that a lot of this had to do with these young men responding to what they perceived to be Jamie and Gladys being the attempt to take advantage of them, and that they may have roughed up the two guys in the car. But my
question was, they said that the robbery victim said that the Gladys and Jamie Scott didn't have anything to do with the crime. Did he not?
Well, he admitted that they were not the ones who allegedly took any money from him. I think he was trying to cover up from his own sexual misdeeds, and so he tried to make it look like, when you read the transcript, I think both alleged robbery victims tried to make it look like that this was some kind of conspiracy which Jamie and Gladys were involved in, and a lot of that was coached by the sheriff's department. But the reality is that they don't come up with facts that really put Jamie and Gladys into it. And secondly, the facts, if you look at them comprehensively from the transcript, it really doesn't look like a robbery. And one of the reasons, let me tell you this, neither one of the guys ever came up with the amount of money really that they're supposed to have lost. That's why the charge in the indictment had to say in excess of $10, and that's where you get the $11 from, right? And more importantly, there's a testimony in the transcript by one of the Patrick brothers that the reason he got out of the car because he saw the guy fighting or seemed to be attacking Jamie in the back seat of the car. So that was that's really evidence which raises serious questions. And finally, I forgot to mention that a trustee who was picking up things and helping clean up the grounds a couple of days after the robbery, this is a trustee from a nearby prison, found the wallet of one of the alleged victims, and it still had $60 in it. So nobody's going to rob you and take and leave $60 in your wallet, you know what I'm saying? So there's serious questions whether it was a real robbery. But most importantly, two things should be emphasized. We don't think that they had anything to do with whatever happened to those two young men, those two men. Secondly, nothing happened to him very seriously. One of them alleges that he got hit in the back with the butt of a shotgun. There was only one gun supposed to have been there, and the Patrick brothers are supposed to have produced that. It was never shot, never used in that way. And then the other one says he got hit in the head. But neither one of them had any medical intention. Neither one of them were hurt. And finally, regardless, and this is the point we're trying to make to those hardliners, is that regardless of whether or not the Scott sisters had any involvement whatsoever, they have more than served time that should have been appropriate for that kind of conviction. They've served maybe five or six times the time that a normal person would have. There's no comparable sentence in the country
And that brings me to this question. So how is it that in Mississippi the laws would allow them to get a sentence this death? I mean, how can that be?
Well, in Mississippi you have a system whereby the jury finds you guilty of robbery. The jury can give you a life sentence. Now, the judge actually can't give you a life sentence himself directly, but the jury can. Now, that system may be all right in some instances where somebody gets robbed and killed or severely beaten, or maybe somebody takes $1 million from somebody or robs a poor old lady out of house and home. But in this case, there's no way that the option of a life sentence should have even went to the jury. So the judge is at fault there, allowing the jury to even consider that. Moreover, knowing the judge in the case and his history, which is very tainted in terms of racial background.
Tell us about his history, because doesn't he have some kind of connection to the KKK member
getting a life sentence? The KKK, one of the KKK members who were involved in the killing of the three, or one of the right-wingers who was involved in the killing of the three civil rights workers, was convicted years, of course, just really within about 10 years ago, was convicted. This was the judge in the case. Even though he was convicted and had to sentence the people, he tried to give him, he tried to give the guy who was convicted a bail on appeal. Now, he never gave the Scott sisters any bail on appeal, but he gave this guy a bail on appeal, which meant that if he would have gotten out on bail, he probably would have died before the case was ever resolved on appeal, and because he was an old man to start off with when he went to trial. And he showed other things which would be considered as favoritism towards the guy who was convicted of these crimes. But,
well, let me ask you this. Didn't the district attorney that tried this case say himself that he thought the penalty was too stiff for the crime?
That's reported. Yes, that's reported. That's true. That's reported, and that's relatively recently. That wasn't something that was said a long time ago, but relatively recently he did say that he felt that the penalty was too stiff. This is what the papers reported. I haven't talked to him directly, but the papers have reported this. And I haven't heard anybody, actually, that says that the penalty is not too stiff. But the one point that, you know, I think readers should understand is that the way you handle a trial, if you're a judge, also can send a message to the jury. So I think the message was sent to the jury, not only that the Scott sisters should be convicted, but they should get a life sentence, and that's what they got. They got a double life sentence.
Double life.
A life sentence for each person.
With that double life sentences for the both of them, that means that they wouldn't even be eligible for parole until 2014? Is that correct?
Yeah. Under Mississippi law, and in a way, that it just so happens that a year after they were sentenced, the law was changed. If they would have been sentenced a year later with that double life sentence, they would not be eligible to parole until they're 65 years old. But because of the fact that they got in before Mississippi abolished parole for so-called nonviolent for violent crimes, because they got in before that happened, then that means that they're under the old law where you serve 10 years on a life sentence. So they have to serve 20 because they were sentenced consecutively. So they have to serve 20 years before they can be considered as for parole under the old Mississippi law, right?
Well, you know, what's shocking about this case is in Texas, we have like the three strikes you're out, you know, and here. But in Mississippi, what's shocking is that these ladies didn't even have criminal histories. So how could this happen on
Well, it shouldn't have happened. But, you know, it's possible that it happened because of the construction of Mississippi law. But it shouldn't have happened even with Mississippi law, because one thing that shouldn't have happened is the district attorney should not have submitted that to the jury for them to be have a chance to get a life sentence. And the judge should not have read them instruction which would allow the jury to give them a life sentence. Even though the jury can give you a life sentence in a robbery case, the jury doesn't have to be given that option. In other words, the judge can just say this is not the kind of case where we're going to even read that instruction to the jury and could go ahead and sentence them something else, which is what he should have done.
Can I ask about there's been rumors in some places it was even written that there was an issue with the Scott County Sheriff down there and that he was shaking people down for money and that may have been what this is all about. Is that correct?
The draconian or cruel nature of the sentence probably arrives from two different things. One is the history of the Scott family in the county. The father of the Scott sisters, and I think his brother, Both apparently were involved to some extent with the Scott County Police Department, or Scott County Sheriff's Department,
mm-hmm.
and both of them had given some information to the authorities, the federal authorities, with relationship to the whether or not the Scott County Sheriff was involved in some kind of illicit drug and traffic and some kind of illicit kickbacks on liquor sales. And so that had, I believe, called the sheriff to be prosecuted and at least to give up his office. So the deputy who had been in office at the time that the sheriff faced these consequences was the one who was sheriff at the time, and so he put pressure on the Scott sisters kind of in retaliation for what the father and the uncle had done. So that's the history. And then plus, the history of the judge in this case has been always bad, plantation-minded judge who basically rules with a very cruel and authoritarian hand, is generally against all defendants, particularly black defendants, and certainly has the wrong kind of racial proclivities. And so all those things added up to a very unfair trial and unfair results.
Let me ask you, they're from Forest, Mississippi. Did this crime take place in Forest, Mississippi?
Either there or about, in other words, it could have been right outside the city, but it's right near Forest. It's in Scott County, and Forest is the main city in Scott County, right?
And I understand that they had children, young children, at the time of this crime, and now their children, some of them are adults now?
Yeah, they're in their 20s. And Jamie, of course, is 38, and Gladys is 36. At the time of the incident, Gladys was 19, I believe, and Jamie was 22. So, yes, you're right. They both have children. I believe one of them has two and the other one has one. I really forget exactly how many children they have, but I know one of them has two, and I believe the other one has one. So, yes, their children are grown. They're grown at this time, right? Mm-hmm.
Some people are saying that that crime reminds them of the Black Panther, George Jackson, and how he was given, I think, what, life without the possibility of parole for stealing $70?
Yeah, he was given an indeterminate sentence. In other words, he could have gotten anywhere from 1 year to life, but he wound up serving closer to, he did serve for life. He served until he died because the prison system refused to let him out, particularly given the kind of consciousness that George Jackson held, where he was helping solve problems in the prison in terms of gang fights between Hispanic and black prisoners, and he was really beginning to teach both sets of prisoners how the state was the problem and not the, and stop fighting for each other. Prison system had a problem with George, and so continued to deny him any kind of parole and kept him in jail until he was murdered.
Okay, so let me ask you. You told us what all you've done in terms of trying to get them released. What else is left?
Well, what I haven't told you is that we recently just filed another petition to the governor. And when I say a petition, this means a legal paper, an application,
mm-hmm.
for a pardon or a clemency or for a commutation of sentence. So in other words, we're telling the governor, any way you choose, let them out of prison. It's time to let them out of prison. They've been in there too long. The sentence is ridiculous. Now, one of the things that your audience should know is that this governor has given five pardons.
Really?
Four of them have been to men who have killed their wives or their girlfriends. One of them has been to a man who killed a 91-year-old person. And so these are convicted people who have been convicted of murders. I'm not in a position to comment on whether or not they should have gotten their pardons because I don't really know anything about them. But I do know this, and everybody else should know this just from the recitation of what happened. There's no way that these young ladies should be in prison at this point in time. And they have a good institutional record, especially Jamie. Doesn't have any kind of rules violations whatsoever. So there's no way that they should be still in prison when you have people who've been convicted of killing their spouses and or their girlfriends are walking the street free. So this is a problem. This is a serious problem. So what we're telling the governor is, look, release these young ladies from prison. And so we've sent him that application. Right now, I will say this, is that we had a big demonstration on September 15th, which
yeah.
is where a large number of people showed. And in response to that,
is that correct?
Pardon?
You organized that, correct?
Yeah. Well, the Free the Scott Sisters Committee organized it, and I worked with them in a number of other organizations, including the NAACP, the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, and a number of others who we want to thank for their support, help organize it. But in any event, and after that occurred, the governor did call the parole board and apparently asked them to go ahead and interview the young ladies, or have an investigator interview the young ladies. That's necessary before you can, before the governor can give his decision on whether he's going to pardon them. The parole board has to give a recommendation in Mississippi. He does not have to follow the recommendation, whatever it is, but they have to give one. And so that's what that we expect the parole board to give a recommendation soon. Right.
So what can people do while we're waiting?
Very important and very good question. What we want people to do is to flood the phones, the governor's office, with and send us letters to the governor. Governor of the state of Mississippi is Haley Barbour. Haley Barbour, B-A-R-B-O-U-R. And what we can do is send letters to him. The letters can actually be sent care of me. And I'm Chokwe, C-H-O-K-W-E, Lumumba, L-U-M-U-M-B-A. So they should be sent to Governor Haley Barbour, care of Chokwe Lumumba. Send them to 440 North Mill Street, and that's Jackson, Mississippi, 39202. And in the letters, we should request and urge strongly that the governor grant these young ladies a pardon. So that's one thing you can do. The other thing we can do is that we can make phone calls. Now, unfortunately, I neglected to bring the governor's phone number with me, but if you want to get that number to make a phone call to the governor, then just call our office at 601-353-4455. 601-353-4455. We will give you the number to the governor's office, and we're asking that since they've been in 16 years, that each family should make at least 16 phone calls to the governor in order to make sure that they know that these young ladies should be released. And then finally, let me say this, Free the Scott Sisters Committee, if you make a contribution to the Free the Scott Sisters Committee, that money will be used to help in their, what you call it, their commissary, and also with any expenses that the committee encounters in terms of its campaign, the Free the Scott Sisters. And the Free the, and that contribution can be made to Free the Scott Sisters Committee and can be sent to 440 North Mill Street, Jackson, Mississippi, 39202.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Have y'all reached out to our president to say, hey, can you do something to help with this situation? Have you all done that at all?
No, there's been no direct contact with him. There's been somebody. Somebody did suggest that, and we probably will go ahead and try to pursue that. Actually, legally speaking, he has no direct power over the situation. But, of course, he is the president of the United States, so there may be something he can do. But the state system is independent of the federal system. And so, but we will be letting him know and letting his attorney general know, who is, who also should be informed of this situation, what the situation is, and see if they can use their influence, try to persuade Mississippi authorities to do the right thing.
I saw two petitions online, one with the NAACP and one seemed older. Which petition should people be signing?
I think the newer petition with the NAACP is fine, and actually either one of them are fine. As long as you just make sure you sign it and make sure it gets to us, that's fine. You know, we'll use all of them. We're going to use all of them. Now, when you said, now, let me say, we use petition in two different ways in this conversation. The petitions online are petitions where individuals can sign to show their support for these sisters, or they can write letters, as I just indicated. And that's fine, because that means we'll take the signatures of everybody there and submit them to the governor. Petition, in the other way I was using it, means a legal document, which we have filed as their lawyers, actually specifically seeking to release. The other petitions, the ones that the public is signing, are going to be used as supporting documents in order to show the governor the kind of support that Jamie Gladys has. And let me just say one other thing. This is particularly important, and I think that we should understand this. This governor right now is about to run for president on the national level, at least that's the word. Now, I don't know, I mean, whether or not he has a chance of winning presidency is another question, but I'm sure he feels that he wants to position himself that if he doesn't win the presidency, he'll be the vice president or get some kind of office with the federal government. He's about to end his term of governor next year, and after that he cannot run for governor again. So he wants to position himself. So I think it's important that all over the country we make it well known that no one's going to tolerate in any kind of national office a person who is from a state which is keeping these women in jail like that. And so I think that's something to know, and I think that if we send at this point very clear letters asking for their release, then we'll be in a good position to demand their release if something is not done, you know, relatively soon.
I agree. We've mentioned that the NAACP is involved. Didn't the Black Caucus get involved as well? The Legislative Black
Well,
Caucus?
The Legislative Black Caucus, yeah. They are members of the Legislative Black Caucus. I understand the Legislative Black Caucus has actually passed a resolution. I haven't seen the resolution. You're talking about the one from the Mississippi. The Legislative Black Caucus from Mississippi has passed a resolution supporting the Scott Sisters. Okay. The Jackson City Council has passed the resolution supporting the Scott Sisters. I don't think the Congressional Black Caucus has done so yet. We're going to ask them to, and Benny Thompson has also sent the letter in supporting them. Benny Thompson now is the congressional representative for the predominantly black district in Mississippi, the District 2. So he has sent the letter and actually was going to be at our rally except for the fact they had to be in Congress voting that day on September 15th. But so we're going to be expecting Benny to take our request to the Congressional Black Caucus for them to send us a support too. Support is growing, and I expect it to grow exponentially, you know, over the next.
Do we have any celebrities on board yet?
We got letters of support from. We've had Angela Davis who sent us a letter. She was going to come to the rally, but she couldn't come, so she did say that she supported it. Tom Joyner's program did, in fact, talk about it and made statements which were very supportive of these Scott Sisters. We understand that Al Sharpton's committee is studying the situation, and we expect them to respond positively. And I'm sure there's some other people that I'm probably forgetting. Alton Maddox, who's a very attorney I respect a great deal from New York, came down to speak at the rally for the Scott Sisters. So did Omali Yeshitele, who's the chairman of the African People Socialist Party, and he's out of Florida. He came to speak. And Charles Barron, the city councilman from New York, has sent his support. What we're looking for is if they are not released by April 1st of 2011, we will have another massive demonstration, and we expect to have a number of different people of national notoriety as well as thousands and thousands and thousands of regular folks to show up at that rally.
Asking everyone, celebrities and, you know, normal folk alike to get involved.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then on the local level, a lot of state legislators have come out publicly to support it. And like I told you, the Jackson City Council people, both individually as well as a group, have voted to support the Scott Sisters.
And there's a lot online. There's the petition, as we talked about, the two petitions out there, the NAACP's and the other one. There's a website up, freetheScottSisters.blogspot.com. They also have a Facebook page. Is there anything that I forgot to mention as far as what they have out there?
No, I think you hit it, but I just want to keep giving that phone number, 601-353-4455, to people that want to get directly involved or want to get the governor's number so they can call. And you can send your correspondence to the governor, to Governor Haley Barbour, care of Chokwe Lumumba, and that's me, Chokwe Lumumba, 440 North Mill Street, M-I-L-L Street, Jackson, Mississippi, 39202, and you can send contributions to the Free the Scott Sisters Committee to the same address. And I did forget to mention that Ben Jealous, who is the president of the NAACP, came down to came down to Mississippi to help me present the petition, the official petition, to the governor's office. So they're very much on board.
Let me ask you, are the Scott sisters aware that we're doing the show today?
Oh, yeah. And, in fact, I forgot to mention to you that the Scott sisters did send out a letter of they want to thank you for doing the show. In addition to that, they sent out a letter to their supporters for the recent demonstration and things of that nature and asked that I read it over the air.
Well,
they're very short letters.
Okay.
First from Jamie Scott, it says, to all the supporters of the Scott sisters, words cannot express how grateful we are for all the hard work everyone has done and continues to do. It's hard in here, but knowing that we have prayers all over the world is helping us stay strong. My health is not as good, not very good, but I am holding on. Thank you, each one, so much, Jamie Scott. And she sends a special thanks to the Free the Scott Sisters Committee. Then we also have one from Gladys Scott. It says, thanking you for everything you have done for me and Jamie, for fighting for our freedom, and may God bless all of you. And
wow.
So she also sends a special thanks to the Scott Sisters Committee. Okay.
How are their spirits when you all see them? How are they?
Well, they were really uplifted by the demonstration because the demonstration showed an outpouring of support from a lot of regular folks, and particularly from college students at Tougaloo and Jackson State.
Wow.
Those college students are now reaching out, I might say, parenthetically, to HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities all over the country.
Wow.
And we expect to see the presence of college students from all over the country when we have the demonstration April 1st. We're going to have a demonstration April 1st. If they're out, then the Scott sisters will be there to speak. If they're not out, then it will be a tremendous protest looking for some consequences to impose economically on businesses as well as the government if they're not going to let them out. But in any event, the support really uplifted the spirits of Jamie and Gladys, and they were very happy to see it.
There were several hundred people that came out, correct?
Yeah, there was probably up to 1,000 people at the high point.
Wow!
It was at a noon period demonstration, so obviously the crowd varied because some people had to go to work and they came out and then went back to work. But I would say it was upward toward 1,000. I'd say if you were to give an estimate, 700 to 800 people would be a fair estimate. Okay.
And y'all walk from where to where?
We walk from the Ferris Street area. Ferris Street is the historically black street in Jackson, Mississippi. It's kind of like the Beale Street from Memphis, if you've heard of that. We gathered at what we call the Ferris Street Park in the black community and walked all the way around to the governor's house, had a brief demonstration at the governor's house, and then moved from the governor's house to the state capitol.
Wow.
Right here is where we had our major demonstration, right?
Was there any counter demonstration?
Oh, no. I don't think anybody's got nerve enough to come out in the counter demonstration. No.
Okay. I'm just so surprised that they are still holding on and still after 60.
Yeah, it's amazing. But let us not only give our prayers, but our work and our effort, and let us make it very clear this is not the kind of thing that's tolerable in 2010 or 2011, either one, right?
So what are the conditions in that prison? I mean, we're hearing about
all conditions are bad in all prisons. This conditions and this, you know, Jamie lives in a place where there's a lot of dirt, gathering of various different, moth or different things which are unsanitary. The food is not good. It's not nutritionally good, and it's not always handled the best. The cleanliness of the prison is a problem. So, and not only dust and things of that nature, but just sometimes just garbage and stuff. So it's not a good prison. It's not a good scene. And all prisons are overcrowded, just about. I know this one is. And so this is, they're suffering the ravages of a country going mad. You know, with all the incarceration going on in the United States, it's just a sign of madness is really what it is. I'm a lawyer. I've been serving as a lawyer since 1976. The United States incarcerates, and this is important to point out, because Jamie and Gladys's incarceration is not the problem. It's a symptom of the problem. It's a very dramatic symptom of the problem, which we should not tolerate. But the United States incarcerates something like 2.5 million people, more than any other, and maybe more than that. I heard 2.5 million. That might be just the United States government itself, but when you count state governments, it might be upward to 4 million people. You have more people incarcerated in this country than anywhere else in the world, period. There is no
way.
Wow. China, Cuba.
But their sentences are like what happens in the Middle East somewhere. I mean, you know, we don't typically give out double life sentences for $11 robberies.
And typically speaking, even though the United States does a lot of talking about what happens in the Middle East, their system of penal institution is really worse than anywhere in the world, even including the Middle East. There might be some draconian measures taken in the Middle East which might be emphasized, but the reality is that there's all kinds of human rights violations. And the reason is because the penal system in the United States is really for economic survival and for profit. The United States has so badly managed its economy, not just over the last since Bush, but for many, many years, is that they've created a dilemma for themselves where the only way that many people work is because they do put people in prison. If you stop crime tomorrow, think about it. How many people would be out of work the next day? You got all these people working as lawyers, judges, probation officers, prison guards, police officers. You got all kinds of prison police officers. You got the city police officers, the county police officers, the state police officers, the federal police officers, the secret police officers, the secret police officers that watch the secret police officers. You got so many kinds of layers of the police state and the penal state is that this is what's paying people's salary. Remember, you used to be able to go to Ford's or General Motors or work at one of those textile mills up in New York to get a job, but right now those, or go to an oil well somewhere down in Texas. But those jobs are quickly dissipating because of the fact that those companies are ripped people off and taking their jobs to countries where they can rob people at $25 a week in order to pay them and not pay folks here for those jobs. And so what they have done to try to augment that is particularly something which increases significantly during Clinton's era, is they've created prison jobs, police jobs. And a lot of the people who are incarcerated, there's no way, you know, Jamie and Gladys are clear examples of people who don't need to be incarcerated. But I'd say probably 80% of the prison population in the United States don't need to be incarcerated. 70% of that population is probably in there because of drugs. And the drugs are not going to be stopped by throwing people in jail, especially who use drugs, and even little lightweight sellers who sell in order to support their habits.
Let me ask you this. Didn't Gladys and Jamie's father and a sister die since they've been in prison?
The grandfather, I believe, just had his funeral. And I believe the sister did not die. That was a misprint.
Okay.
They actually don't have a sister who has died.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the father. No, I know someone just died, and I believe it was the grandfather that just died. But they had death since they've been in prison.
Because I heard, unless someone is putting it out there erroneously, that their father died of a massive due to this.
Well, I would I'm sorry I can't respond to that, but I know someone just died, and I thought it was the grandfather. It may have been the father, but somebody did just die. And it may have been that both of them have died, the grandfather and the father, since they've been incarcerated.
Okay.
I know that the father was alive when they were incarcerated. I know that. And I know that they just had a death within weeks ago. Right.
Mm-hmm. Who else seeking some legal help, or is that not the case anymore?
I've put out the call for lawyers who want to contribute their talents to the legal team. They should do so. They can call us here again at 601-353-4455. There are some legal options. Right now we're concentrating on this pardon, this parole, this pardon, this clemency, or this commutation. But there are some legal options that we still have available to us if this doesn't work. And so we want lawyers to sign up because this is an expensive proposition of trying to do these things. And they obviously are not in a position where they can pay, right?
And how do they send money to the Scott Sisters Fund?
The Free the Scott Sisters Committee. You can send it to that, Free the Scott Sisters Committee, and that can be sent to 440 North Mill Street, Jackson, Mississippi, 39202.
AJ, do you have any questions for Mr. Lumumba?
Not really. I just thought that, you know, it was definitely informational and a lot of information out there. I just think that there are so many different issues, just like you said, you know, 4 million people in America, approximately. And more than likely, at least 52 to 55% of that is African American of ethnic, you know, ethnic race.
Absolutely.
But I'm just, so we, you know, just like in Texas, we have a committee that's freeing people, you know, almost monthly. On somebody that was wrongfully accused, wrongfully incarcerated, you know, for DNA, just like you said. So, but I think the thing is everybody needs to get involved, and we definitely need to send out letters and make calls and, you know, do everything necessary because we are such a reactionary people that sometimes we even way too late to even have a reaction to the matter. And this is 16 years, so we're definitely late on the process.
Right. Right. Well, I thank you for those comments, and I thank you all for giving us this opportunity to speak to the public on this, and it's very important, and we're going to definitely stay in touch with you and prepare for April 1st to come to our demonstration and maybe broadcast live from the scene, right?
That sounds good. Yeah, that would definitely
be. Let me ask you, do you feel encouraged that we're going to get a resolution soon concerning the Scott system?
I am encouraged that they act so fast to have the parole board interview them. That is encouraging. That now, what that means, I don't know yet, okay? But I know that they can't be released until the parole board does make a recommendation. So the fact that they've sent investigators in to interview them is encouraging.
Are you doing this case pro bono? I mean, is that how you're able to do it? Or
Yeah, we're doing it pro bono. The only aspect of the case that would not be pro bono is we may very well be forced, if we don't get the relief that we're seeking, to file a suit. And the suit would be because of the medical conditions and treatment of Jamie Scott. Obviously, we're trying to keep things as, on a level where we can get the parole and the pardon, so we're not trying to antagonize the situation. But if we're not going to get the relief we need, we're going to have to sue. If we sue, then part of the suit would be for funds. Part of it would be to force them to give her better treatment, including releasing her. And if that happens, then then there would probably be attorney fees coming from the suit if we win. That would only be if we win. But right now it's all pro bono. It's all pro bono, and it costs a lot of money to do this. So really, not only are we doing it pro bono, but we're spending money in order to support them. But we're not complaining about that. We're just asking folks to share the load. You know, that's all.
And I understand that. And let me ask you, when are these two sisters incarcerated at the same place, or are they in different facilities?
They're in the same prison. But they're in different buildings at the prison. And I don't know why they separated them like that, to be quite honest with you, but they're in different buildings at the prison. One is at one building and one is at another building. So they don't get to see each other on a regular basis. Just sometimes when they get certain visits, they will allow them to get the visits together so they don't see each other. And then there is a program at the prison where when someone's sick, like Jamie is, they will allow a relative of that person, if that person is incarcerated with the relative, to administer to them, in other words, to be in the same cell with them and to make sure that they're taken care of. For whatever reason, they denied Jamie and Gladys that right. So I'm very disappointed in the Mississippi Department of Corrections and the commissioner that runs it. He's a colored fellow.
Really?
His name is Christopher Epps, and there's no reason for him to have taken the position on these ladies that he has. First of all, he had the power to let them out of prison, let Jamie at least out on a medical emergency, and he ruled otherwise. He's failed to articulate the fact and admit that Jamie has no other options but to get a kidney transplant, even though he knows that's true. He's not prepared to pay for a transplant, yet he's not prepared to let her out in order to get a transplant. So I'm very disappointed in his behavior. Actually, to this point, the governor's act better than him. And the governor is, of course, not a person that historically has been on the right side of the fence, but we're hoping that he's going to do the right thing this time. Right?
I've heard that several people have offered to give Jamie a kidney. Is that correct?
Yeah, her sister is one. Her sister is, and but the prison hasn't even done what it's necessary to do to get it tested to make sure that that this would be a, you know, her kidney would be consistent so that she could get the transplant. But so they could do that, and not only has Gladys offered it, her sister, but several other inmates have offered it. Many other inmates have offered it, as well as people on the outside of the prison. Relatives.
Allow something like that to happen? I mean, do they do transplants in prison?
It would be very unusual and probably novel to do that, but they do let people go so they can get transplants. You know what I'm saying? That happens. But I don't know. But they could. I mean, if they refuse to let her go, they could pay for it. They could send her to the hospital and pay for a transplant.
What we're doing
is giving them an opportunity to say, well, let her go and we'll take care of it. We'll find a way to pay for it. But if you don't want to do that, then do it yourself, you know what I'm saying? But they're not moving to do either one. Right?
Well, as sick as it seems that Jamie is she in a medical ward at the prison?
No. She spends a lot of time in the infirmary, but she's in a regular cell. She's in a cell, you know. But, she's a cell where she's rushed to the infirmary on a repeated basis and to the hospital on some days. As I indicated, no, she's not in a medical. There is no such thing as a medical ward in the prison. There is an infirmary, which is not where you can keep anybody on a continuous basis. It's where you go to get some treatment, first aid, or whatever you call it. Okay.
Let me ask you: was it true what I read that her best friend fell dead in front of her?
Her good friend, very good, and it may have been her best friend, but this was somebody that she knew. Yeah, that's true. There was a person that died. And it
right
really
in front
caused,
of her.
Yeah, yeah, and it caused a very bad effect on her. She went into a state of depression for a while. And it's rough, you know, see that happen, and then also to know that you're in a compromised situation where the same thing could happen to you.
And how many times has he had these emergency attacks where her kidneys and things just, you know?
Well, the attacks have centered around the machine not functioning, the dialysis machine breaking down. That's been one of the reasons. And so she couldn't get dialysis, so she had to be rushed to the hospital to deal with that. The attacks have also centered around infections caused by the machine or by the application of the machine by people who may or may not have known what they were doing. So she's had infections as well as the breaking down of the machine. This has happened at least, I don't know how many times it's happened altogether, but it's happened at least four times that I'm aware of, and I'm aware of this happening since about February, at least four times. Right?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, give out all of the information where people sign petitions, write letters to the governor.
Okay.
To you, give to the Scott Sisters, defense fund?
Yeah, Free the Scott Sisters Committee. Okay, the things that we can do is that, A, you can call for more information, and that's at 601-353-4455, 601-353-4455. We can write letters directly to the governor. Write your own letter to the governor, to the Free the Scott. You can send it to Governor Haley Barbour. Barbour, Haley Barbour, and you can send it care of myself, care of Attorney Lumumba. Lumumba is Lumumba, also 440 North Mill Street, Jackson, Mississippi, 39202. You can send a contribution to that same address, the Free the Scott Sisters Committee, and that's 440 North Mill Street, Jackson, Mississippi, 39202. There are petitions online that folks can sign. I'm going to let you give that blog address where they can find that. But if you need more information on that, if anybody does, here again, call the phone number. I don't have the blog address in front of me, but it's 601-353-4455 to find that online. Finally, call that number in order to get the governor's number. or it's not hard to really get the governor's number from Mississippi. You can get it from information. But we want everyone to call the governor's office, in addition to sending a letter, to make it clear that you do support the Scott sisters' release. And so those are the things that we can do. And also prepare to be here April 1st, 2011. We're going to have a massive demonstration again here in Jackson, Mississippi, in support of the Scott sisters. And we expect to have thousands of people from all over. It will either be a celebration of the release of the Scott sisters, which is what we're looking for, or it will be another demonstration to make it clear that they must be released.
Okay. That website is freethescottsisters.blogspot.com. Again, that's www.freethescottsisters.blogspot.com. We want to say thank you. Is it Chokwe Lamont?
It's pronounced like S-H, Chokwe. It's spelled C, like Chokwe. But it's Chokwe Lumumba, right?
Well, thank you so much for being our guest. You have brought us up to speed on everything that's going on with the Scott sisters case. We hope for a resolution to this really soon. We're asking everybody to get involved, sign petitions, write letters, support the cause through your funds, whatever we can do. Is there T-shirts available for the Free the Scott Sisters?
Yeah, if you call in and ask for one, we are coming up with T-shirts. Actually, there shall be some printed fairly soon, okay? And,
like a T-shirt.
Everybody
should get a T-shirt. So across the country, everybody can know that we're involved in the Free the Scott Sisters movement. Again, thank you so much, Chokwe, for being our guest today. And if you need more information, Chokwe's number is 601-353-4455.
Thank
correct?
You very much, Carrie. Thank
okay,
you both.
Thank you.
For your hospitality. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay, that's going to do it for us this time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.